I checked in the ministry, it was also included there that the World Economic Overview. I just requested previous day that we focus on a particular country, and I think the minister. Let me take this opportunity to welcome you all, especially the minister, the deputy minister, and the whole team of the EDC. You report to. And put in more energy, I would say so. I don't.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, the Secretary, two members have reported the state of late arrival with a simple apology for the Ministry staff of the Director General of the Department. Who's attending the ESET cluster meeting in Cape Town.
Thank you, Mr. Paul. Just as a way of educating us, what is ESET? Is that one for too many for us to hear? Minister, may I welcome you and give you the opportunity?
Let me first say good morning to honourable members and since this is the first meeting of the Portfolio Committee, may I wish all members and their families a wonderful 2017. ESET Chairperson is the Economic Now that's different to the ESET Cabinet Committee. So this is not a cabinet structure. And information from government side on the performance of that part of the economy that economic development monitors and acts similarly. Chairperson, the report will cover integration, looking at the example of South Africa and Zambia. Third, a brief report on food and agriculture, followed forth by sharing with the challenges and the public interest issues that we've been pursuing. Sixth area that we'll cover is some standard report on key performance indicators, followed by a report on human resources, and concluding on mining production was down. In other words, the actual ore that was mined was reduced, but mining sales had improved, which is a function partly of prices. Retail trade contracted, but retail trade grew in real terms by 1.7%. We're not making too much of it. We've projected it for a 3-month period. So they're still soft numbers, but as you can see through this chairperson, on a couple of key indicators, the economy is still not getting the traction. ...6% point lower than the previous quarter. And quite an important thing to note, the number of jobs created grew much faster than the labor force. It grew by 235,000. And we'll break those down a little bit more in a moment. And total employment had gone just over 16 million. In fact, it's the highest number of employed to date. We should more people tend to be employed in December. So even though we've breached the 16 million employment mark, we can only be comfortable with that if it can be sustained for a few quarters. Total employed was 5.8 million, which is 4. From June to December, there was actually quite sharp employment growth, 500,000 people, additional jobs. But if you take the year as a whole, then it's a much more modest, a much lower performance. A little bar graph here at the bottom is very useful. This takes us from the time that the new growth path was adopted. And you can see here, this is percentage change in employment just before the adoption of decline, and in most cases employment has grown. So when you see the bar above the line, subdued, even though the last 6 months is strong. If we So first, the if we take the top job-creating provinces by percentage are these: Northwest, Limpopo, and Western Cape. By total numbers, not percentage, but the actual number of jobs created, it would be Western Cape, the performance on jobs for the 12 months as a whole, which includes the last 3 months. Then the three fastest growing provinces were Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and KZN. Well, where were these jobs created? Which sectors of the economy? If we take just this quarter that we're looking at, what has happened in the 3 months compared to the previous 3 months, you'll see the following. That the single biggest one is government. That's 73,000. And you'll see here the other numbers, so you see quite a nice uptick in manufacturing employment. And for the quarter, a reduction in construction. If you take the year as a whole, the entire 12-month period, this is what it shows. Your best performer for the 12 months was the transport sector, followed, interestingly, actually all your private sector services, excluding trade, accounted for 56,000 additional jobs. Construction, taking the year as a whole, still grew quite strongly. And utilities is your Eskom and so on, the public utility. Trade and mining. So this is October to December. This is January to December. So that's a very quick overview of what's happened in the domestic economy, Chairperson. And I'd like to turn then to the next focus area, which is regional integration. In previous presentations to the committee, we focused on the importance of Africa as a market and as a economic bloc. And we pointed to the fact that just seen the December figures now, so we literally this morning were still inputting the December figures. A deficit, a trade deficit of 2.9 billion rand. In other words, we But actually, December's figures were very interesting because until November, we were running a trade deficit of just over 14 billion rand. And when the December figures came in, it sharply reduced the trade because commodity prices have recovered a little bit, so that gives us a bit more. And perhaps in the next Africa is a key thing that we keep on monitoring. And over the same period, we are the So, let me say that this blank screen on your printed copy, the good news is, you'll So what colleagues will see on page 10 of the hard copy is that economic growth rates for the Zambian economy have tracked that of sub-Saharan Africa. In fact, if you look at that, it's quite interesting. Zambia is the blue line. South Africa is the red line. And looking at this, you'll see the pattern by broadly speaking, with the exception of 2010, following the same pattern. We make the point on slide 10 that the minerals economy increased its contribution to Zambian GDP from 2000. Slide 10 gives you a little bit of the detail and showing how the share of minerals in Zambia's GDP has grown. Okay, so we're going to go back to this the screen on page 11 or slide 11. We say, while Zambia's performed well, for the medium term there are challenges. After 8 years of positive trade growth and a positive trade balance, meaning Zambia was exporting more than it was importing, they had a negative trade balance in 2015. Exports was almost 30% less in US dollar. That USD is United States dollars. They still expect copper prices to be only 80% of what it was in 2013. It is therefore likely that Zambia's growth deficit or surplus with the rest of the world. And here you'll see from this period, Zambia does in other words, we sell a lot more to Zambia than we buy from Zambia. Our exports last year amounted to 30 billion rand, and our imports just short of 3 billion rand. So in other words, for every rand that we buy from Zambia, we sell 10 rands. Partner for Zambia, not surprisingly, South Africa, followed by the DRC, China, Mauritius, and then Kenya. If we look at the five third most important country to Zambia for selling refined oil to them. And our share of the Zambian market is about 16%. Cobalt is the second biggest. We don't sell any crude oil. So this is unrefined oil. It's the third biggest and we don't sell any. Then copper ores and concentrates we sell. So these are basically, these all help Zambia with a little bit of beneficiation of their raw copper. Fertilizer, we are the biggest seller of nitrogen-based fertilizer. Shows us, honourable members, is, and there are a few more slides that will amplify it, that will give more products, but they really show how important South Africa is as a supplier of key inputs and consumer goods in the Zambian market. So let's give a little bit more detail. Tens of African exports to Zambia in US dollar value, and the share of the total for other fertilizers, so we see between nitrogen-based fertilizers and other fertilizers, we basically account for quite a significant part of what Zambia needs. Bulldozers and iron This slide shows the top five imports from Zambia. So we buy refined and alloy copper, copper wire, insulated wire, some sugar, and some iron alloys. If we look at fertilizers, a little case study, Zambia imported 4.6 billion rands worth of fertilizers. If we take all the fertilizers, nitrogen-based fertilizers and other fertilizers together, we account for about half, 2 billion rands worth of fertilizers. Zambia also imports substantial amounts of meat. This is another take. We've just done a couple of different tables to show variations of the test. If you want to know where are we the biggest suppliers to the Zambian market, it's something like liquid sprayers, fridges. I mean, just look at this. Fridges, we supply 72% of all the fridges that are imported in Zambia. That are imported into Zambia. And remember, Zambia doesn't assemble any of its own trucks. So you're really talking about half of all Zambia. Of the debate about regional economic integration, and the issue of South Africa gets from its trade and economic relations with the rest of the continent. That xenophobia, the attempt to blame others for the challenges that we face, there isn't an economic foundation for it. So even though in the constituency work that all of us does in government and members of parliament. We wanted to also reflect a bit on non-trade relations. The IDC has come in and supported this. It's the only thermal power plant in Zambia, and it will provide baseload power. So some of Zambia's current energy needs will be met by this, and it will also be a significant constant source, unlike hydro and so on. That steady supply of coal, you can basically generate electricity. The plant has been completed. The IDC is now in the process of testing and handing over. And here we have a little bit of details on the metrics. In October last year, the first unit was passed, and the second unit was passed in December. So in this quarter that we is that the project diversifies Zambia's energy sources from an almost total reliance on hydropower at the moment. If you have problems with the flow of water in the river, economy and create a source we hope of quite sustained growth in Zambia. We look at trucks. South Africa is the big player, followed by Japan and then China. And if we look at right at the bottom here, if trucks as a and Kenya, and even to the rest of Africa. Cars, we did a similar thing, but it's a very different swing on the car story. Zambia imports a lot more cars . And you can see here in Zambia we sell only 0.5% of our total exports is made up of cars, whereas in Botswana it's 3%, in Namibia it's 5%. The red is South Africa and the blue is Japan. If we look at this period, what it shows is a rising import of cars from these three countries. You see it. At how big South African made cars are in the Zambian market, about half. Democratic, and you take a line through democratic and people, and you drop people. But you're taking out democratic and people. Okay. So I think this graph is quite important if we're looking at trade relations. We've been rising to a significant share. If you look at this, it's almost half. Trend with the industry and with the DTI who runs the car program for South Africa, and look at what is it that makes it so difficult for us to maintain or even increase our share. Observation of the difference between Angola and Zambia, because we covered Angola last time. Partly understandable. It's an immediate next door neighbor, it's easier to sell. But if we dig a little bit more, we also see we're buying a lot more from Angola than from Zambia. And why? Of products that are used in the South African economy. We don't have a major copper beneficiation program in South Africa. So we can't buy a lot of Zambian copper. But we need petrol. So we buy quite a lot of Angolan oil. So what it shows to break the pattern of African countries not trading with each other. The critical thing is to boost industrialization is important in Zambia, Angola, Namibia, everywhere, if we want to deepen the level of trade. And the challenge here is food security. Members of the committee would be aware that food prices have been rising, and part of it is drought related. Our interventions, we indicate a few areas that we've intervened. But let's first look at agricultural output. So this is, let's call it the agricultural GDP, just for shorthand. In 2013, you see the value of it just under 70 billion rand. Now, by the way, what we've done is to avoid inflation. Of value 1 year compared to the other without the distorting effects of inflation. In 2014. And then a decline. And part of this decline, of course, is the key reason for the decline is the drought. And we see 5 quarters where it comes down, and then 3 quarters where it's flat. What happened on jobs? From the 1970s, agriculture lost large numbers of jobs. So we were quite pleased that as a result of a range of interventions, and in spite of the drought, it appears that agricultural employment numbers are rising. We've breached the 900,000 figure. So from a time when employment about a 250,000 additional jobs have been created in agriculture. And job growth in agriculture, the rate in which jobs are growing in agriculture is double the rate that jobs are growing in the percent rise. If you look at agriculture, it's a 36% rise. So what has been interesting is that even in the period of the drought, the Stats SA figures still show a fairly significant rise in agricultural employment. The drought has, however, impacted on food prices, and we see were 20% higher by the end, by January 2017, compared to the end of 2017. Massive increase in food prices. So what have we done about it? First thing is, I issued ITAC a directive to review the formula that is used for import of formula compensated farmers for shifts in the international prices of wheat. We worked on the assumption that it's a fixed cost inherent in farming, and when you have massive fluctuations elsewhere, it can push farmers out. And because once farms are abandoned, it's difficult to get them back in, the formula is supposed but it pushes the price up for consumers. So I've asked ITAC to re-look the formula. They've done that now. They're trying to balance jobs, food prices, investment, and so on. They've made recommendations to address the price formula, and we're now inside government finalizing a position on that report. Next, soya farming. Honourable members will recall that we gave the example of our interventions with Noble, and the committee even visited important plant to bring more African farmers into the value chain. And we've now identified 39 black farmers in the Gertsibandi district Mohammed, who's sitting here, has been with Duman Kosi, Mohammed Vardhan. Duman Kosi has been engaging both the farmers and the company. And it's a useful example of how one can leverage to bring information on soya production and the steps we've taken. Next, IDC, and here, honourable members will see over this period, from 2010, the IDC in the rand. Also see that the disbursements were 3.5 billion rand, and this is an example, the Berg and Dal Rooibos plant based in permanently in 20 seasonal, and they've now expanded their capacity. Bring more small-scale farmers into production, and we've got to leverage off major companies to help new the final example that we want to give here is MassMart. And MassMart, also as part of the competition settlement, agreed to support some local producers. Here's Marble Gold, it's a fruit juice manufacturer. Brand, 19 full-time staff. The MassMart Supply Development Fund gave them 200,000 to improve their capacity, and they now supply Macro and Game with 6-pack fruit juice packs. Next is Corima Farms. It's a black-owned farm in the Winterveld, and they grow cucumber and pepper crops under hydroponic tunnels, and they've been supplying MassMart. And MassMart gave them a grant of 78,000. They employ 15 full-time staff, and hopefully they will be expanding their capacity in future. What we didn't put in here, because we were still finalizing the latest information, is the Agro-Processing Competitiveness Fund that was set up as a result of the Pioneer deal some years ago. So you get more imports in a period when we have a drought, or alternatively through bringing more farmers in so that you've got more competition, or alternatively by support to existing farmers to upgrade. The Competition Commission initiated an investigation into the construction industry, but times to the committee. Essentially, we got a penalty of 1.4 billion rand imposed against the companies in July 2013. Thereafter, the state entered into discussions with seven of these companies to say, industry. And the key elements are highlighted here. A fine of 1.4 billion previously imposed by the tribunal, plus an additional 1.5 schools, working capital for small construction companies, and technical capacity, project management capacity inside the state, particularly in smaller municipalities. Third, transformation package. And this transformation package is quite significant. We've put a They can either sell their shares to Black South Africans, or they can take Black South Africans and partner Avenge, which is another major company, will be selling something like 3 billion. Won't follow the equity model. What they will do is they will take 3 black owners. Turnover, their collective turnover, to 25% of WBHO's turnover. So essentially by joint ventures, technical support, helping them work out how to sharpen the pencils on expect about 40 or so Black South African owned firms or shareholder blocks . Finally, each of the CEOs signed an integrity commitment to take in the construction industry. Now that's quite an important commitment because the battle against corruption has to be fought on both the corrupter and the corruptee. And this is, if we can get more companies in the construction industry to the vehicles from Korea appears to be from North Korea, not South Korea. And separately comment on that when it comes to the discussion. On a more serious note, if we go back to competition, we did quite a bit of engagement on competition issues. Part of it is the policy work, engaging with lawyers, companies, trade unions, the judiciary, the Competition Commission and Tribunal. So we spoke with lawyers at Bowman Gilfillan, and we engaged with lawyers at the Law Society of the Northern and CLICS committed that they will seek to expand employment by 65 to 90. And use South Africa as a key base for their products. They also made a few training commitments, learnership opportunities, internships, and then a lot of young pharmacists can't get work experience, they can't get placement. And so CLICS said that they will place a number of them, about 80 to 100 bursars will be considered. So on the one hand, honorable members, we get something good. We get a retrenchment moratorium. We get a training commitment, and we get some localization comfort. But the market becomes more concentrated. And this is a challenge because the law at the moment doesn't deal specifically with this. It deals only with this as an aspect of restricting competition, not as an issue on facilitating entry of smaller players to a market. So I wanted to give this as an example, that you can tick all the boxes. And remember, we can only act in accordance with the law. And we all recall the years gone by when you had these small pharmacies everywhere. Is more limited. A second example, and they're two quite complex examples that I wanted to give. In the shops, they employ about 43,000 people, and they went into some economic difficulty. Honourable members with long memories may recall many, many years ago seeing in the media that the Edcon Group was bought out by a United States-based equity fund, Bain Capital. Mitt Romney, by the way, is the major player in Bain. And what happened with the company is the new owners, instead of putting their own money up for the purchase price, they borrowed being challenged, and there was talk of the company potentially going into business rescue. Edgar owe me 100 million rand, then I will take that to be 100 million. Rand, they must pay interest, whether they're making money or not. But if it's shares, they only begin led by the high interest ball. So they came to us and said, look, this is the only way of rescuing it. We had concerns about job losses, local procurement, and the BEE profile of the company. The outcome was they gave a commitment, obviously subject to what is happening in the market at the moment, to maintain jobs and to do their close to it as was possible under the circumstances, that they will shift from buying more from they found that they were overpaying the brand holders of the imported international lines, and they're maintaining the existing BEE profile. So here's an example of a company in distress where, with some degree of cooperation, instead of us putting tough they get to make money, and as they make money, they stabilize the employment of more than 40,000 people. So these are different examples to what we highlighted last time when we gave Coke and AB InBev two profitable operations and how we deal with those profitable operations. Here we're giving Edcon as an example of a company focusing, so I'm going to run a little bit more quickly through the KPIs. And these special focus do come in the KPIs, but we just clustered them together so you can see an overall picture as opposed to breaking them up into each KPI. So starting with the public policy work on KPI 3, we did a number of meetings with trade unions, business leaders, and we had unions from a number of sectors attending, and they looked at how merger investigations are conducted. And the different interests are balanced. So the competition authorities like it when it's known what the employment impact will be, and the unions are obviously one key input in that. The next one is we did work on food. I've covered were to develop an entrepreneurial mindset, manage successful enterprises, show young people how to apply for funding, and we had a number of people who contributed in the period covered. Resources, we mean capital to start a business. But if we can get a few energetic entrepreneurs and support them, back them, help them, thing to promote. The Deputy Minister of Economic Development highlighted at the IDC workshop the issues of youth unemployment, the Youth Employment Accord, and it took them may want to elaborate on this a little bit later, perhaps during the Q&A session, but this indicates most provinces now have their plans and are canvassing funding and investment. We facilitated the MINMEC that was held in November, and in that MINMEC, there was a discussion on special economic zones, agro parks, and the black industry. A 1.3 billion rand agreement with CIPLA to build Africa's first fully integrated biopharmaceutical plant in the Musina SEZ and Saldanha and OR Tambo. You see the kind of progress that we're making, horticulture, pipeline of investment in Saldanha. In Musina Makado, you see the anchor investment that we're seeking to land. And in Kuga, the IPP investment with the growth of IPP, it's quite an important area for us to get components made, and Richards Bay IDZ. This indicates what had happened on the DD did was to analyze this. You'll see IDC, this is its contribution. Projects in the DTI and the IDC just in 2016 alone, 54 toolkit, and there were 6,000 young people who came to this Career Expo. shifting our industrial relations from an adversarial one where parties rely purely on power to a more rational one where parties analyze information, they look at the opportunities that a company has to improve its market. We will provide more information on this in the next quarter because we wrapped up the agreement in quarter four, which is the current quarter. The Deputy President made an announcement publicly on this. The President referred to this in SONA, and as I indicated, I will come back to the committee with a more detailed presentation on the different elements by the time we do quarter four. Here the department just worry, it's locally made. We then asked the department, can we go and speak with your supplier? They said, fine. Email. Or it's the fax. Email. Within 1.5 hours, the supplier comes back, humble apologies, we really apologize, we've now investigated and it's clear this thing is imported. Now, the story ends well. We found within an hour, we found a number of cap manufacturers that would immediately be available, and the caps that were finally used were actually all locally made. Now, one little cap order isn't going to change the story. But what we're discovering is that in a number of cases, local procurement provisions. And we don't have an alertness in the state. So EDD is beginning to step in that space and just doing spot checks and then providing information. We now Treasury, we managed to solve one set of challenges, and the Minister of Finance reported on that in the medium term. Mountain berries. It's really an agricultural infrastructure for surrounding farms, and $50 million capital expansion. Construction was delayed, however, because there was no water use license. We escalated this to the PICC unit to unblock, and they intervened with the Department of Water and Sanitation, and the ULO was issued on the 28th of November. Did a bit of work on a new funding framework for You only allocate money for 12 months. But a lot of infrastructure programs are multi-year. So what legal, let's say there's no legally binding way in which they can guarantee those resources. So we often have stop-start operations. You start on a project, you hope you get the budget the following year, you slow it down, budget comes. We put a piece of work together with and for National Treasury that is now being considered. We also had discussions with time. So they don't want only a portfolio of short-term investments. So we've got to find a good mix. They've got a certain return they want, and we need to see whether we can meet that return requirement. If we can, then there are, of course, more resources. Structure, because it's such a good fit that infrastructure is a long-term project, and pension funds need to think long-term. Cabinet decisions, we're just highlighting here a few key cabinet areas of work. Agreement, taking a transport cab MIMO through the cabinet system on the N3 highway. The feasibility of setting up a technical project management unit. Number of PICC meetings held and facilitated. And then in SIP 5, which is the one that I chair, we launched the steering committee. We visited some infrastructure projects in this quarter and held a community in Bizo. This and a few other examples show one of the key things that we do, one of the key roles of the department. To the striker. And so many times the ball is just stuck in the midfield and it's just being moved from person to person. And that's what many government departments are engaged in, shifting of paper. So we got to another example is the LaSalle Research Water Supply. It's a company based in Midrand and they produce Handy Andy, Sunlight and so on. They use a lot of water and they have erratic water supply. Interruptions. The next one is COFCO Agri. It's based in Lekwa. And we assisted them. And then the final one is, there's a government program called Working for Water. This program when he was Minister of Water, Water Affairs at the time. So that their challenge is how to keep a flow of work to sustain the people that they employ. So we open a small little door for them, which is they've got something called the Eco Furniture Program, where they basically do school desk furniture, walking sticks and other products. And they've got factories in Harankua, Albasini Dam area, in Mpumalanga, in KZN, and in Western Cape. Why don't you buy some furniture from this public entity? And Masmart said, bench there was actually made through the Working for Water program. And if I'm not mistaken, I think this initial order for 350 units of furniture. And if this Working for Water program can sustain that, they now have a new potential outlet. Now, we can't manage it from here. All we can do is open up the door, help them a little bit, get it pushed through, remove the bureaucratic stumbling blocks, and then we've got to step back and leave it to that department to maintain those relationships. So in each of these, they... it's a standard report, so I'm going to just point to the IDC funding and the sectors it's in. This one shows you the jobs, and this one shows you the money. My engagement with the IDC in that period. The food tariffs, but in addition to that, I've issued a directive to ITAC to harmonize the tariff book, and in December, the Deputy Minister of Finance published the amendments that I had approved for changes to the import control regulation. Of the Competition Tribunal and the Chief Commissioner of ITAC, and there were meetings with economic the challenge of the personnel cap at 118 posts, and then the EDD financials, which were pre-circulated. So, Chairperson, I'm going to take them as read, but we have officials. Cover in this presentation is a few cross-cutting things on the economy and areas of work we've done, as well as more detailed KPI work. We have one quarter left to report, and then that would wrap up the current financial year, and then we go into the new financial year, and we will be coming back to the committee with the new APP, which will be tabled during March, where we're trying to build from the lessons we're learning from each of these quarters' work to reposition the APP of the department. So thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity, and that wraps the
to allow about 30 minutes for all of us, 3 minutes each, which means 30 minutes for questions, and then the rest of the time will be allocated for responses and follow-up times, which are going to be 1 minute per follow-up. I think that would take us then to the quarter to one, the lunch hour. Take the 10 minutes and then come back to the question time.